Good day and welcome. The American Immigration Lawyers Association is pleased to present the 2016 AILA Annual Conference on Immigration Law Pre-Conference Seminar titled Moving Diversity Forward. Responsible organizations support diversity and inclusion. AILA works to promote these values by helping to build awareness and by incorporating diversity and inclusiveness initiatives into its organizational structure. Panelists will address the benefits and challenges of fostering a culture of diversity and inclusion within AILA. And now it is my pleasure to introduce today's speakers. Our session will be presented by Alan Orr, AILA Board of Governors, Diversity and Inclusion Committee Chair, Washington, D.C., Victor D. Nieblas, AILA President, City of Industry, California, Joseph K. West, Partner and Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer, Dwayne Morris in Washington, D.C., and Teresa A. Waters, Senior Director, HR and Administration, AILA National in Washington, D.C. And at this time, I'd like to turn the seminar over to our discussion leader, Alan. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank everybody for listening in. And I'm going to start right away with Mr. West and ask him, what is a diversity and inclusion initiative?
Alan, thank you for inviting me. I'm honored to participate, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for AILA and its membership and its mission and its goals. I think the best place to start in answering the question of what a diversity and inclusion initiative might look like is to understand why it's important. The fact is, despite the fact that our society now is as diverse as it has ever been, and I think immigration lawyers know that better than anyone, our profession, the legal profession generally, is the least diverse of all white-collar professions. And part of the reason for that is because there's a bit of a disconnect between us not having a meaningful approach to diversity and inclusion and understanding why it's important. All of the entities to which we as lawyers respond these days, whether it's the bench, whether it's members of Congress, federal agencies, regulatory entities, even governmental or corporate entities, all of these entities are as diverse as they have ever been in the history of our country. Right now, 31% of all matters that come before the bench, whether it's a federal or state court judge, are likely to be heard by a person of color or a woman. And so despite the lack of diversity within the ranks of our profession, all of the entities to which we are asked to respond and to sort of ply our trade in front of have become more diverse than ever. And I think what that means is that you're more likely to have people who are people of color or women making decisions that affect us, affect our clients, than ever before in the history of our profession. And so I think it's incumbent upon us, particularly lawyers in the space where AILA operates, to be focused on diversity and inclusion and be purposeful about developing diverse talent within the profession. You know, the other thing, frankly, is that because of these demographic changes, if you want to have long-term viability of any entity, but particularly an organization like AILA, then you have to develop bench strength. You have to develop talent that will ensure the long-term viability not just of the organization, but of its strategic goals. And when you have strategic goals that speak to advocacy before Congress, that speak to advocacy before the judiciary and federal agencies, that have as one of its missions to educate an increasingly diverse public about the ways in which U.S. immigration law and policy serves the national interest, then it makes sense to make sure that you grow and develop diverse ranks of talent that can go about accomplishing these goals and these objectives. Prior to my current position as a partner in the trial group and the chief diversity officer at Duane Morris, I spent 4 years as the CEO of the Minority Corporate Counsel Association. And, you know, MCCA is a nonprofit that is focused on increasing diversity and inclusion in the corporate legal sector. And its members include corporations and law firms and some governmental entities as well. And if you go to MCCA's website, there is one of the research projects that we completed in the last year of my tenure, which tracks the diversity of the federal judiciary. It's a sort of an interactive map that will show you every federal appointee in the history of Article III judges. It tracks them by race, by ethnicity, by gender, by circuit, by the president who appointed them. And what you see is this long-term trend that has continued. And, of course, you know, who knows what the next presidential election will bring. But, you know, the trend has been towards greater diversity for the judiciary, ironically enough, considering how lacking in diversity our profession is as a whole. And so what that means is that if for no other reason than the fact that you're far more likely to have someone who looks like you acting as a decision maker on matters that are important to you and important to your client, it's incumbent upon us as attorneys generally, but particularly in this space, particularly in the space that is steeped in immigration law, it's incumbent upon us to be mindful about issues around diversity and inclusion. And so I'm honored to be on this panel and have some of the wonderful, talented people who will be participating as well. So with that, I'll turn things over to Victor.
Thank you very much, Joe, and thank you, all of you, for being on this panel. These issues are extremely important, not only to our organization, but society. So definitely thank you very much. I want to start off by asking a question to all of you. Why is diversity important for AILA, or why should it be important to AILA? And it's important for us to discuss that and ask these questions and really think about why we need to address this type of issue in 2016. As you all know, AILA is the premier immigration bar association in the United States. We have 39 chapters, three of them abroad. So certainly our commitment and responsibility to diversity should be no different than the responsibility of, for example, the ABA, state bar associations, or bar associations across the United States, even probably the same responsibility of academic institutions like law school, postgraduate and undergraduate institutions that seek to diversify not only their staff, faculty, but their students. And of course, being from Southern California, you know, I have to mention Hollywood. And in their efforts to diversify actors in major roles, screenwriters, crews, directors, and other areas. So diversity is important. And as previously stated, diversity is essential to a functioning democracy. We all need to be part of the wheel, of the tools that get this wheel going. Opportunity for people from every conceivable background should not be seen as a social experiment. Rather, it should really be seen as a reality that the intersection of different life stories and different sensibilities provide real learning in our association. Nevertheless, as we all know, and I recently saw in an article on the need to diversify colleges, diversity is important because it mirrors our values. How do we own up to stacked decks, and how willing are we to make adjustments? So certainly there is a historical component for the need of diversity. My experience in AILA really, I think, provides an example of why we need diversity. Traditionally, in AILA, diversity meant geographic diversity or diversity in practice areas like removal versus business immigration. But other areas of diversity were really never addressed. This meant that throughout the years, I've seen lack of different perspectives and experiences in AILA. lack of leadership, for example, diversity leadership was not present. I was shocked walking into the Board of Governors meetings for the first time in, I believe it was 1999 or 2000, and seeing the lack of diverse leadership in the room for an immigration bar association. I thought that was pretty stunning. ALA committee representation also lacked diversity. Year after year, I saw the same great individuals that were member of the same committee over and over again, to the point that it was a big deal if you could break the glass ceiling and be selected as a person of color to these committees. And we kind of still see that today. Speakers at conferences also lack diversity. I was stunned to see year after year many speakers were chosen over and over again, and they really lacked diverse authors as well in articles and publications. So the issue has been very glaring from my point of view, and that's why I decided many years ago, specifically in 1997, to start a trek within ALA and see where it took me. And lo and behold, this past year, I was the first Mexican-American selected as ALA president in its 70 years. So imagine 70 years without a Mexican-American leading an organization that deals with immigration. So it was somewhat, a breakthrough. And it wasn't easy. For many of the the executive committee members throughout my tenure that I dealt with, it was really the first time they dealt with a person of color that was not their client. And sometimes, and even today, I'm still treated as a client. So it really hasn't changed. But being the first Mexican-American in leadership brought about new experiences in leadership style. There's always, as you move up in leadership, there's always a struggle to decide whether you want to assimilate to the existing leadership style or acculturate to the leadership structure. So what do I mean by this? Well, do you continue with the traditional standards, not rock the boat, just make sure you're there, you follow everyone's lead, or do you take bold stances on issues, knowing it might disrupt the traditional conversations of what's being mentioned? For me, it meant a struggle to be understood. My passion for the issues were, and still are, misinterpreted as hostile or hostility. And you have to understand that as an immigrant coming from a community that is overrepresented in the removal and deportation context, the issues take a different meaning that require a more passionate presentation than those traditionally presented. So these issues mean a lot more to me. That doesn't mean I'm hostile. Probably more passionate than others. With that in mind, this year we made sure that diversity played a big role in my presidency. But the learning curve still continues for our association. We are behind major bar associations like the ABA, State Bar Association, and other bar associations when it comes to the issue of diversity. Many have, for several years now, created diversity departments, diversity and leadership councils, or diversity and inclusion committees. This past year, with the partnership of Teresa Waters, part of the ALA staff, we created ALA's first diversity and inclusion committee. And the goal of this committee, hopefully, will long survive my leadership tenure here in ALA. Hopefully, others will carry that important torch. This past year, I made sure that we appointed a diverse group of speakers to represent the true face of ALA at conferences. I did see, as I was now part of the leadership style, the leadership structure, some of the traditional models of exclusions that were playing a big role in the selection process, of speakers, of people on committees, and I was able to see simple issues like, oh, I know this person, oh, they buy me drinks, oh, they work in my colleague's firm. These were some of the examples that I saw, not necessarily all of the selection factors, but certainly some of these were considered. I don't say this to demean anyone or attack anyone personally, but it is important to be critical of the traditional structures that exist. Shining the light on the process was an important step in developing diversity initiatives in AILA. Don't get me wrong, some members were beyond worthy to serve on these committees, and we should be honored that they are willing to volunteer hours to our organization. However, opportunity must be provided to all, not just to a selected few. In our article that's part of this podcast, we state and we asked, after all, we are the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Our belief in working with members, their clients, and our staff is that we build a nation of immigrants, which enhances our own. Because we are AILA, our actions should go beyond advocating for fair and reasonable immigration law and policy, based solely on the nature of our work. More than any other organization or association, we have a responsibility to ensure a culture of inclusion and engagement. To finish this segment of why diversity is important to AILA, I quote an author of the upcoming superhero movie called Black Panther, which will be the first black superhero in comic book history to make a big screen debut. The author responded to a question, why is diversity in our superheroes so important? The author, Ta-Nehisi Coates, responded, what purpose does it serve to have all white superheroes? His exact quote was a little bit more revealing. He said, I turned that question around and asked, how does it reflect the real world to show just a bunch of white guys? So diversity certainly should be important to AILA, but how do we get there? How do we set and establish short-term and long-term goals? For that, I really want to go to an approach, a four-step approach that I heard an actor, Devon Franklin, mention in the midst of the Hollywood diversity scandal. He said, and this should really apply to how we implement diversity in AILA, he said, in order to ensure diversity, we have to first get involved in recruitment, retention, incubation, and ascension. This should be our model in AILA. Everyone has heard about recruitment, and our article has indicated that we need to recruit more diverse members, and this starts with law students. I believe we have to start at the bottom. We need to increase our efforts at attracting law students interested in the area of immigration law. Our membership department and committees must focus on more events to help that law student be attracted to be part of not only the immigration bar, but AILA. Scholarships for school, and hopefully scholarships to attend our conferences so they can network with other attorneys. Recruit more diverse membership at the chapter level. Identify new leaders and get them involved. Recruit more leaders for chapter board so they can be part of the chapter leadership. And also recruit more leaders to serve on the board of governors. Ultimately, hopefully this will all lead to recruit more leaders to serve on the executive committee. I certainly don't want to be the only person of color to ever hold this position. I want others to be AILA presidents as well. So hopefully we can open that. Retention is important. Recruitment is not enough if we don't retain our new leaders. We have to make sure that we focus on retention efforts to allow and make sure that these individuals remain within the organization, remain interested in the organization, and remain involved. Incubation, as you all know, that usually comes from incubating eggs, keep them warm until they're ready to crack. Certainly that's what we need to do with our leaders. Make sure that our retained leaders get the experience needed to continue growing as leaders, and we really need to focus on that. We can't just be satisfied with retaining them. We have to make sure that we go beyond that to make sure they get the experience needed so they can become strong leaders. Ultimately and finally, hopefully, they will ascend. Ascension. We have to enable diverse leaders to ascend to leadership positions. We have to make sure that there is a route, a method in which these leaders can continue their leadership positions, be on chapter boards, be on the board of governors, and ultimately, hopefully, the executive committee, so they can one day also be AILA presidents. we have to do these four things I believe is important. And just to add something, I read a recent article in which Pomona College here in Southern California instituted a tenure requirement, a diversity tenure requirement, in order for a professor to be considered for tenure. And I thought it was interesting. I thought it's something that we can include very easily within our structure. When a candidate runs for a position, especially Board of Governors or Executive Committee positions, they have to write out a questionnaire, and they're asked many questions. What are some of the issues in AILA? From what you see, what would you do? What have you done? And I would want to include a question in that leadership candidate questionnaire asking how they were attentive to diversity issues within our membership. And hopefully this will send a message to everyone that diversity doesn't start when you are at the top leadership. It starts as you go through the entire process of leadership, of the leadership structure in AILA. Hopefully we can address some of these concerns, but I know Alan has a little bit more specific ideas as to how we can implement short-term goals within AILA. Alan?
Thank you, Victor. And so my goal as the committee chair has been to sort of implement the vision that Victor has set forth, understating the considerations that Mr. West made very clear at the beginning that we need to sort of do this for survival. And among those most successful short-term goals are that we have established the committee and that we have a mission and that we meet monthly on telephone calls to sort of address any issues that we feel are important to the AILA membership. Our goal is to enhance every member's experience with AILA and their growth. So that's around for everyone, because the more diverse the room is, the better the experience is for everyone within AILA at all levels. And what I think is super important among this is that when you go to a conference or you participate in your chapter, that you see someone like you in all positions of the membership. And that's really what the goal is. So now that someone, that Victor is the president, and he's been all the positions under being the president, a member who has joined our organization within the last 5 years can see someone of Mexican descent at a high level of AILA and ascend to the presidency, so they think in their minds, I too can be president of this organization. Let me see how Victor did it. And the main goal of the committee right now is to work as mentors. What we're doing is sort of making sure that we go through all of AILA and collect the different pockets of diversity, see what type of skills they bring to the organization so that we can present individuals to the leadership for consideration for speaking, for writing, for serving on the different committees. And that's our mentor role of sort of understanding and finding this pocket of talent and enhancing their visibility. Now, that's a very low-level short-term goal. The long-term goal is to have, just like we have with the speakers normally, but a database of individuals from all of our pockets of diversity that can be called on at any time for any of the speaking opportunities or writing opportunities. Because one of the larger challenges is, now that AILA is close to 14,000 members, is actually knowing who diverse members are and what diversity they bring to the table. And so we're going to help sort of carve that down for everyone so that we can sort of address those issues. In addition to that, we are going to be the sponsors for these individuals. And the difference between a mentor and a sponsor is really super important. A mentor can help you develop your practice or develop your skill at any given level, and they're super important. You can have mentors for your practice and mentors for your life. A sponsor is someone who is above you and able to bring you to the next level, and that's our main purpose for the diversity committee, is to make sure that we push individuals forward through the organization, through the executive staff, through the committee ranks, understanding that these are long-term commitments to everyone. So the first thing we sort of thought about in the committee is, how can we sort of break down the day-to-day membership experience so that an individual will know when they're ready to participate and at what level they're capable of participating, right? Because I think there's so many committees and so much out there that you never know, am I ready for this, right? Do I have the skill set to be successful doing this? And what we basically have said is, first, let us know who you are, and we'll help you make those assessments, because for the most part, everyone who's on the Diversity and Inclusion Committee, all are speakers, all have written, all have produced conferences. So we know what skill sets required, and if you don't have those skill sets, we can help you through the mentor level create and manifest those skill sets within yourself so that you're able to be appointed to the next level within the organization. Beyond that, with the help of Teresa and her guidance from the national office, we have committed a diversity website, which will house all of the diversity information, which will help leadership that in the past may not have thought about diversity as broad as Victor has established, so that they can go back and think, oh, you know what? I'm doing a conference in June. Let me go to this diversity page and sort of think about what ALS policies are with regards to this, and who can I reach out to include more diversity at this level? Where can I find these other issues, right? As well as recruitment, which, you know, we are a member organization, as well as recruitment to colleges, universities, for different law students to sort of join our bar, right? That's one of the other arms that we're sort of working on as far as the goal structure within the organization. By the end, we want to be able to sort of give diversity scholarships to individuals to attend conferences that might not be otherwise able to attend. We want to be able to influence through articles and blogs different diverse considerations in practice areas, because all of our clients are not created equally. And by allowing individuals from those communities to have a voice in the leadership, we expand the conversation to increase different perspectives that might lead to a better consideration in making a position for ALA to take in the various communities in which we live and work. And that's kind of the big goal and the short-term goals for the committee. If you want to get involved with diversity at any level, we recommend that you take a look at the interest groups that are available to every member under your membership profile. You may join an interest group even if you don't belong to that community. You're still allowed to participate in the phone calls, in the meetings, in the brown bag sessions. And I recommend that you do, because it will also add a different perspective to where you are in your practice by knowing exactly what's out there in ALA in general. The key level of implementation will be at the chapter level, through the chapter chairs and vice chairs, to sort of make sure they recognize young talent within their chapter and ensure that they're in the pipeline for success with ALA. As Victor said on the call, he started his journey in 1997. It is 2016. That's a lot of time to sort of build the history that he has with the organization, and we want to make sure that people are prepared to have that same sort of history along the way. So, in light of that, part of what has happened is that we have the support of XCOM through the first vice president being on the committee, which ascends to the presidency, with the main national office, with Teresa Ward as the head of HR being on our committee, who has helped us sort of push policy forward both for the membership and for the national office. Teresa, would you speak a little bit about the diversity implementations at the national office?
Sure. Thanks, Alan. You know, what we've spent most of our time doing when we developed the strategic and annual plan for 2016 was making sure that our work in connection to the members and the committees and whatever we did touched on diversity. When we had panels, we wanted to make sure that those speakers were more diverse people. We wanted to reach out to ensure that we had diverse authors. Whatever we were doing, we wanted to walk that talk that we're talking about in terms of diversity and inclusion. We have created the website for members, which will launch in maybe by the middle of next week, which will be a resource page. It will have our diversity and inclusion mission statement that was adopted by the board in the spring. It will let people know what the committee is working on. We as a staff are going to be undergoing our own training to make sure that people here in the national office understand what we mean when we speak of diversity and inclusion and how we're really serious about moving this goal forward. We're doing a lot of things to try to keep this thing alive and to keep the momentum moving, because I think it's just as it is important to the membership, it's very important to the staff.
Thank you, Teresa. Mr. West, do you have any comments regarding policy implementation that you've seen work well in other organizations like the MCCA?
Yeah, so one thing that is important, and I kudos, first of all, to the leadership of this organization, just listening to Teresa, to Alan, and particularly to Victor speak. I think it speaks volumes about the organization that there's such strong leadership that's committed to this issue. I think you've already accomplished the first and most important objective, which is getting the leadership of the organization focused on and concerned about this issue. The next, I think, most important thing is to communicate, and certainly this call is going a long way towards accomplishing that objective, communicate both the importance of this issue to the membership and how it can benefit them in a meaningful and practical way. Because, you know, let's face it, all of us at the end of the day are self-interested, and people want to know and understand how they will benefit both collectively and individually by as a result of anything. One thing that I'm doing at our firm, at Duane Morris, is conducting what we call our DM360DI, and that stands for Duane Morris 360-Degree Diversity and Inclusion Initiative. And what it is a task force that we've put together that's charged with the responsibility of looking at every single initiative, every single policy, everything that the firm does, not necessarily just limited to the diversity and inclusion realm, but everything that the firm does, and understanding its impact, how it impacts and is impacted by diversity and inclusion, both from an internal standpoint in terms of our own recruiting, growth, development, and utilization of our talent, retention and advancement of talent, which speaks to a couple of points that that Alan and Victor and Teresa both made, but also as it relates to the long-term viability of the firm from a business development standpoint, making sure that we utilize the strengths that we have from a diversity and inclusion standpoint, from a business imperative standpoint, connecting with both those existing and prospective clients for whom diversity and inclusion is important. And I think the same sort of principle can apply to an organization, making sure that you understand that every single thing that you do affects and is affected by diversity and inclusion. You know, the analogy I like to make when I talk to organizations about the importance of diversity, so many of them will say that diversity is a core value, but don't treat it as such. Every firm, every corporation, every entity would say to you that ethics is a core value, that they do everything in an ethical fashion, and that ethics informs and is informed by all of their decisions and everything that they do. Yet no one would just have an ethics guy come in once a quarter, give an ethics lecture, then leave and then go about doing business in the usual unethical manner. And yet that's the sort of peripheral, ancillary approach that a lot of entities have when it comes to diversity. You know, they'll have someone do a panel that focuses on diversity or have a call that's focused on diversity, and then once that's over, it's out of sight, out of mind. that's a very short-sighted approach, and it's one that, you know, frankly, will be crushed by the weight of demographic inevitability as our country becomes more and more diverse, and no one knows that better than immigration lawyers, and our institutions become more focused on diversity and inclusion. 12 years ago, there were a grand total of 3 Fortune 500 corporations that had the position of chief diversity officer. Today, 2/3 of the Fortune 500 has a chief diversity officer position. And, you know, if you know anything about corporations, you know that they don't create C-suite level positions because it's the flavor of the month. They do so because they understand the business imperative of diversity and inclusion, and they understand that long term, the viability of the organization depends upon making sure that diversity and inclusion is embedded as a part of its long-term and short-term growth and strategy. So the most important thing that has to happen is that a holistic look at everything the organization does and as it relates to diversity and inclusion has to take place, and it has to be embedded into the fabric of the organization and made a part of the DNA and the culture of the organization.
Thank you so much, Mr. West. That's very useful and helpful for us to keep in consideration and basically the full mission of what the committee hopes to do. And I'm glad that you talked about ethics, because that's really the next point that we wanted to sort of talk about, was the ethical considerations in moving diversity initiatives forward and sort of the challenges within our organization that with our structuring history. The diversity and inclusion initiative is about an opportunity. And I'll say that again. It is about opportunities. It is not basically a quota system or a token system or anything of either of those fashions. We have amazing talent among all of our groups and members within the organization, and we need to make sure that we give everyone a chance to shine and to grow for the longevity of the organization. In society, we realize that there is a bell curve in the population related to the demographics of the baby boomer generation and in immigration, sort of the immigration boom and people sort of going out and joining the immigration bar. So within our organization right now, we're at the high end of that bell. We have a lot of individuals with a lot of experience and a lot of talent. And all of those individuals may and probably should move into retirement along the same lines. And if we don't have people behind them who are capable and able and skilled enough to sort of run what they were doing while they were here, or if they all leave at the same time, just like in any business, it is a structure for failure by not making sure that we have a succession line and that the people are experienced and prepared for the challenges that they will be presented with. And also the ability of just knowing the history. Everyone knows that if you have a really great mentor who understands the history of immigration law, more so than just the one particular code that you're looking at, you'll have a better understanding of why you're doing the petition and how that level of immigration started and why it started and why the reasons you need to address it. Just like in any time you look at legislation, you go back and look at the legislative history. And a lot of our members have that legislative history. And if they don't sort of pass that on to younger members, and in this case, because there's such a difference between the high end and the low end, all types of members that may not look exactly like them, then the organization in itself will fail. And that's the biggest problem. In life, I think that people generally aggregate with likeness, right? If you like the same music, you go to the same type of club, right? If you like basketball, you play basketball. If you like football, you play football, right? And those are great for some of the things that we do. But AILA, unlike those particular extracurricular activities, for many of us is our life because it's our livelihood and our practice. And so we need to make sure that we are the council on all the sports and not just broken into these little divisions of specific sports, that we make sure that everybody has a good playing field and the good resources to be successful with their practice. And that's the ethical consideration. We don't plan, or our goal is not to take anything from anybody. Our goal is to expand the table of opportunities within the organization and to make sure that at the table there is someone sitting behind the person at the table ready to take that position. The goal is for Victor not to be the last Mexican-American president or the only Mexican-American president, right, in any time span, specifically not decades later. So that's sort of where we are, and I want to make sure that that's very clear to everyone that it is really about opportunity, right?
And, Alan, if I can add,
sure.
This is Victor. You know, in addressing the diversity issue when I first came in to the presidency, I asked, how should we approach this? How should we be able to talk about this issue? And it dawned on me that we're in 2016. We're not 1940. We're not 1950 or 60. We're in 2016. As an organization, we're behind the eight ball. We're behind everyone in these types of efforts. We really, there is no time for us to be walking on eggshells when we talk about diversity and the benefits that it brings. I mean, we have to be bold in our vision. We have to be bold in our implementation of these policies. That does bring an important factor that I want to share with everyone is that we need the buy-in from all our membership because this will benefit everyone. It will benefit financially as it will ethically, and also it will benefit us morally as an organization that deals with populations that come from other countries that want to either work in the United States, live in the United States. This is what we do as an organization. And I hope that we all can take a look inside ourselves and we consider some of these legal, ethical considerations and probably argue that there should probably be moral obligations as well as we look at these issues, as we look at issues of, well, who should be our next speaker? Who should be on this committee? You know, who should be our next author who writes a book for AILA? All these issues are extremely important, and Alan, I think you've repeated this, and it's important to say we're not trying to take away opportunities from anyone. We're trying to expand those opportunities for all of us. So hopefully you'll have your hearts open and be able to buy into this notion that diversity is important for AILA. Alan?
Thanks so much, Victor. I think we should sort of highlight some of the things that we have accomplished so far in such a short period. And I will say that, you know, it's all under Victor's presidency that this has sort of happened, and the implementation has been great. And Teresa, tell me about some of the things that have happened at the national office and that you've sort of done for the committee. And, you know, let's just talk about some of the wins.
Some of our wins, well, we had the board formally adopt a diversity and inclusion mission statement in April at the last board meeting. We have the Diversity and Inclusion Committee has created a milestone chart, which we will be distributing at annual conference, and is also available online, which will show people how you get involved in AILA, how you can move up, or whatever you want to do. AILA is an organization that there is a place that you can fit in and be involved. We have in the National Committee selection process this year, we were able to change the form to capture it to make sure that in selecting those committees, they could be as diverse as possible because differences of opinions is very important when you have large groups, different perspectives. We have done, like I said, the strategic planning, making sure all of our work across the organization for the year touched on this theme of diversity and inclusion. We have an in-person panel going on at the annual conference that we hope people will attend so we can continue this discussion. And it doesn't end there. We're just going to keep moving forward.
I think that's amazing, Teresa. And in addition, Victor and Teresa has secured a budget for the Diversity and Inclusion Initiative because it's not an unfunded mandate that we sort of help create and change policy and ensure that we have people like Mr. West available to sort of help us guide us on their experience as we do this. In addition, Victor did something extremely noticed by many of the diverse groups. Was this is the first year that there's an African-American with Korean descent as the chair of the national conference, which in my time at ALA I have never seen since 1996. I've never noticed the actual person of color actually chairing the national conference, which means on the big opening night at the national conference, there will be a diverse speaker on the Hot Topics panel because the person who organized the conference will be there. And that makes a big difference to me to be able to walk in a room, especially if it's your first experience, is to see that diversity. And that, I think, is really going to change a lot of everyone's experience for the national conference. Victor, what do you think, I mean, besides me and the committee, do you see anything else that we left out of our accomplishments?
Well, I think it was important for us to have important people in important roles in ALA. And I just want to repeat, it wasn't easy, but it had to be done. It had to be done not only because I know that these people can do the work. I know that they're extremely qualified. It's just the opportunity that needs to be to be given so that these people can shine. And, you know, and so it was important for us to be able to do this. And you know, what I really want to say is I hope that the work that we've done this year isn't seen as a one-year project. But I hope that the incoming president and the presidents that come after him and also the executive director view this as important to ALA and it becomes an institution so that we will continue with these efforts. And hopefully 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, we can look back and say ALA is on top of its game. ALA is appropriately considering diversity issues and initiatives as we move forward, because that's where we need to be. if my work this year led us, took a couple of steps in that direction, then that's exactly where we need to be. And certainly, you know, anytime we talk about diversity, in some circles it might be considered divisive. But in this case, it's all about inclusion. And it's all about who we are as an organization. It's what we do when we advocate for fair and immigration policy in Washington, D.C. It's what we do when we represent clients, whether it be before companies or CIS or where it's before the immigration courts. It's what we do, and it's who we are. So it's just a matter of us pointing a little attention to this issue and making sure that we recognize that it's there, recognize that it's important, recognize that we need to continue acting on some of these goals and implementation. And, you know, hopefully at the end, we will all be a better organization for it. So, you know, again, what we've done is open up doors, is given opportunities to speakers, to committee members, to task force leadership, that were never there before. I can tell you because I've been in the leadership here for many years, and we saw more and more diverse leaders, you know, in holding these positions. And when I mean diverse, you know, it's part of what we discuss in the article, but we don't necessarily just mean racial diversity. You know, we mean sexual orientation. You know, we cover all the gamuts, and it was a long discussion that I had. You know, and again, I'll say it again, there was some pushback. And every time I got a pushback, I would say, out of 14,000 members, you don't think we can find someone who fits the important part of what we're trying to achieve here? And that led to an answer. That led to a solution. So certainly there are a lot of leaders out there. We want everyone to be involved. And hopefully you'll be part of the growing face of ALA. And again, it's all for the benefit of the organization. So, Alan, there's a lot more to do, but this is a good first start. And hopefully this podcast will continue the efforts, and our panel during the annual conference will also continue the work that we're doing here. Thank you, Alan, for chairing the Diversity and Inclusion Committee. The work that you've done was important. And hopefully soon, in a couple of weeks, you will also be part of the executive committee, and another goal will have been met. So congratulations, and thank you all.
Thank you very much, Teresa and Victor. That's great and wonderful. Mr. West, you've been known as the Superman on diversity, so we're going to let you have the parting words. Any sage knowledge for us to as we move forward as an organization to become stronger?
Well, I don't know if I deserve that title, but I'll take it for the moment. It's very difficult to top what has already been said, but I will tell you my approach and the way I look at diversity and inclusion is focused more on the inclusion part and not as much on diversity. I mean, the fact is diversity by itself is simply a numbers game. It really speaks to how many of a particular race or gender or people with disability or LGBT, Native Americans you may have. But inclusion speaks as much to making sure people are incorporated into the DNA of the organization than anything. I call it the tri-I approach for include, invest, and intercede. No organization, let me repeat, no organization can remain viable long-term if it does not include the people that are brought into the organization, into the culture, the DNA, the working of the organization. If they do not invest in the talent that you have and get the full range of talent involved in the organization, and if you don't intercede on behalf of people to make sure that they themselves can navigate the systems that exist everywhere. And from what I heard, it looks like that is exactly what's going on with this organization. And so kudos to you for what you're doing.
Thank you so much for volunteering your time today, Mr. West. And again, thanks Teresa and Victor. And that ends our seminar.
All right, Alan, thank you so much. And at this time, we will conclude today's seminar. On behalf of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, thank you to all of our speakers.
Thank you.
Thank you.